Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape at Drive Time 91.3. 0722380712 is the WhatsApp number. The United States has vetoed, as expected, the United Nations Security Council draft resolution rejecting President Donald Trump's recent recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Anticipating the U.S. veto, the Palestinian leadership in the West Bank promised to take the issue to the U.N. General Assembly to seek the passing of a resolution there. Online is Rami Khoury, senior fellow and journalism professor at the American University of Beirut. Rami Khoury, professor, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
It was predictable, wasn't it, that the U.S. would veto the United Nations Security Council draft, but it seems like they were the only people interested in vetoing it.
Yes, that's very much the case, and it's a reflection of the new reality of the Trump administration. Last year, just about exactly a year ago, the Obama administration abstained on a similar resolution which allowed it to pass, and that accurately reflected really the global consensus on Jerusalem and the two-state solution, Palestinian and Israeli equal rights living side by side in peace and resolving the fundamental core issues of that conflict. The Trump administration has changed that American position. They are almost fully behind the Israeli position, especially the right-wing Netanyahu government. And this was an occasion for them to actually put that into practice, combined with a little bit of personal arrogance by Nikki Haley, the American representative at the UN, whose acerbic character adds to the anger that most people have around the world on the fact that the United States has essentially made itself an outlaw in the international community in terms of respecting the rule of law. And Nikki Haley is acting like an outlaw in terms of being a ruffian and a bully and an arrogant person who basically says America's interests matter more than anybody else's interests and Israel's interests matter more than Arab interests. And this is the reality that Trump represents, and he's very much isolated, and that's why there's a move now to move to the General Assembly, where there is no veto, and the true will of the international community, the whole world, can express itself.
Indeed. I mean, Ambassador Haley, apart from not understanding history at all and making gross mistakes in terms of the history of Jerusalem, describing it as the political, cultural, and spiritual homeland of the Jewish people for thousands of years. I don't know when the Muslims came then. But then she goes on to say, the United States has a sovereignty to determine where and whether we establish an embassy. And she describes the vote as an insult that won't be forgotten. Yeah, I mean, it's a long time since I've heard diplomats being so abrasive.
Well, she's not a diplomat. She's an attack dog.
All right.
And she's basically laying down the law as determined by the Netanyahu administration. And there's many signs of where the Netanyahu government in Israel and the Trump administration in the U.S. And we have many signs. The Trump administration is not an administration that either understands the realities of history or the facts on the ground in the Arab-Israeli-Palestinian-Israeli conflict, or respects the international rule of law as encapsulated in UN resolutions or international treaty conventions and things of that nature. And you look at the team that the Trump administration has put together under Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of the president, who has zero knowledge of the Middle East, zero track record in political mediation, and zero competence in international affairs, and he's supposed to be leading this effort. But it's an effort that's led by three people who are structurally, in many cases, like Kushner, linked to Israeli settlement activities. So this is not a serious operation. I mean, it's an insult to the world, and it's a message to the Palestinians and the Israelis that the United States is no longer trying even to give the impression of being an impartial mediator. The United States is pushing for positions that Israel wants, and the Palestinians, if they behave, will get something, but not equal to what Israel is getting. And this seems to be the driving force behind the so-called peace plan that Kushner and his pro-settlement colleagues are putting together, and that apparently the Saudi Arabians and others are also, the Egyptians and others are pushing for the Palestinians and other Arabs to accept. And this so-called peace plan is, from what has been leaked about it, is so outrageously pro-Israeli and really tries to arm-twist the weak Palestinians into accepting, that this is another indication. So what Nikki Haley did was simply bring to the surface in a rather vulgar form the fundamental underlying bias of the Trump administration, which we've seen over the last year of this administration. We've seen this hinted at and manifested in various forms, but this is the most public and the most vulgar expression of this bias.
Isn't there an irony in this? Because what it's doing, it's coalescing forces on the other side and people that you sometimes wouldn't expect to be on the other side, so-called, are there. And it's going to be interesting, isn't it, when this whole thing does go to the United Nations General Assembly, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be an overwhelming vote against Israel and against Trump, a big slap in their face.
It's an overwhelming vote against Israeli colonial policies. It's not an overwhelming vote against Israel as a state that has a right to exist in security and peace. And that's the whole point of this past resolution that was the Americans vetoed. It talked about Jerusalem, but it also talked about a negotiated peace process that gives both sides their legitimate rights. But we know absolutely what's going to happen at the General Assembly, and because it's happened before. And we also know that the Americans, particularly now, don't care. This is one of the problems that we're dealing with, not just in the Middle East, but in other parts of the world, that this sense of American superiority, it's a kind of neocolonial arrogance where the U.S. says, our people are more precious than any other people in the world. Our value system is the one that should define the world, and our rights are the ones that need to be protected. And therefore, only what the United States says matters, what other people say matters less. And this is now being institutionalized in things like the climate change agreement, pulling out of UNESCO, and many other examples, as well as the veto of this Security Council resolution. So we know where these positions are, and they're just manifested more now with every step. The big question is, well, will the world and the Arabs and the Palestinians and others, will anybody actually try to do anything tangible? Are there practical steps that can be taken to push back against this arrogant neocolonial American position, and also to pressure the Israelis to actually comply with international law, leading to a negotiation, a fair negotiation, a real one, that leads to Israeli and Palestinian states living side by side in peace? There's no sign yet that the world anywhere is ready to take new, tangible, practical actions. There's a lot of symbolic things that are happening, like the Palestinians applying to join international organizations, people recognizing Palestine as a state, people recognizing as the Islamic Cooperation Organization just did last week, recognizing East Jerusalem as the capital of a Palestinian state. Those are all important political and symbolic actions, but none of them are tangible. None of them force the Israelis to change. None of them are like, for instance, the sanctions and the isolation that forced the apartheid regime in South Africa ultimately to collapse and negotiate a resolution that was seen to be fair to everybody, equal rights for all South Africans. And this is what we're looking for, practical responses that force the Israelis to recognize international law, respond to Arab peace overtures that are still on the table, and forcing the Americans to actually come out from their outlaw status and rejoin the international community if they wish to do so.
Of course, I think lots of people in the streets of countries of the world would agree with what you're saying, the sentiments that you're expressing. But I think what is of concern to a lot of people, you've mentioned it already, is the total capitulation of many of the Gulf states to the whole Israeli agenda.
Yes, this is a process that's been underway for some years, quietly under the table. And after the Oslo Agreement of 1993, there were serious attempts to bring Israel and the Arabs into some kind of low-intensity regional cooperation. They set up a joint water center in Oman, for instance, and the Sultanate of Oman, where Israel and the Arabs were working together on water issues that that really are important to everybody in the region. Some countries like the UAE and Qatar had low-intensity trade representation, and so, and that was part of the process that Oslo generated some promise on, which was to have a negotiated peace agreement that was actually fair to both sides, that would lead to two states living side by side. It didn't work, it collapsed, and but you've had the interest in some Arab Gulf countries, particularly the Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and probably the United Arab Emirates. They've had an interest to try to get closer to Israel. And this is driven largely by their sense that the Israelis and some Arabs have a shared interest in pushing back Iran, which they think is a predatory, dangerous power in the region. And it's also driven by the fact that they can count on the Trump administration to basically support them. And this is very much what Jared Kushner is trying to do, is to create an Israeli-Arab-American tripartite kind of coalition that would push back against Iran. The problem is it's not getting anywhere. And what the Saudis in particular are doing in the region is creating new openings for the Iranians to generate strategic links with various Arab partners, like in the boycott of Qatar, their support of the rebels in Syria, their war in Yemen, their detention of Hariri, the Lebanese prime minister, and last week the detention of Sabih al-Masri, the Palestinian, Jordanian billionaire. All of these moves have generated serious, spontaneous solidarity among the local Arabs in those different countries who defiantly rejected the Saudi position. So you see in Qatar and Lebanon and Palestine, Jordan, people basically standing up to the Saudis, even though these are small countries and they're vulnerable, but saying our dignity and the rule of law and the will of our citizens and our best interests are more important than Saudi money or threats of Saudi attacks like the Saudis and the Emirates have done in Yemen. And this is generating new openings for Iran to exploit politically. So you're getting a level of serial incompetence by the Saudi regime in its regional policies that is actually strengthening Iran's links with Arab countries rather than weakening it. So they're not only failing in their expressed policy aims of pushing back the Iranians, they're actually creating greater Iranian links with Arabs. And their latest sense that maybe if they teamed up with Israel, this could work is probably pretty reckless and dangerous and delusional, I think, because any Israeli-Arab relationship is going to be widely rejected by Arab public opinion as long as there is a continued Israeli colonization process going on, taking Arab-Palestinian land and colonizing it and continually killing and imprisoning and torturing and beating up and expelling Palestinians. So, you know, the core conflict remains the Israel-Palestine conflict. And there is a plan on the table from the Arab world from way back 2002 to resolve this fairly for both sides. And the Israelis are not responding, the Americans are not interested. And therefore, the conflict continues and worsens. And Arab regimes, in some cases, like in the Gulf countries, they become an Egypt. They become more isolated from their own people and desperately seek protection sometimes in improving their relations with Israel. But this is delusional, and it won't work.
Professor Rami Khoury, journalism professor, American University of Beirut, thanks for chatting to us, and in your troubled part of the world, everything of the best.
Thanks. for having me. Good luck.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.